තමින්දන් කිරියල්ල ගරු මන්ත්‍රීතුමිය ඔබතුමිට විනාඩි 10ක් කාලයක් තියෙනවා.
Honorable presiding member, first of all I would like to thank you for giving me the time to speak on this very important ministry, the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, Tourism and Foreign Employment. I think a lot of views were expressed regarding tourism and also foreign employment, so I would like to predominantly base my speech on the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. So the Ministry of Foreign Affairs is one of the most valuable and important ministries, as it is the main institution that drives the foreign policy of a country. If you talk about the foreign policy of a state, that is also one of the most important policies, as it guides the country as to how it must interact with other states, international organizations, non-governmental organizations, private parties, for achieving and managing the country's political, economic, defense, social and cultural interests. We know of the Greek philosopher Aristotle. He described humans as political beings. Therefore, friendships and relations across the seas and their use of foreign policy have existed between humans since the beginning of human interactions. So when we analyze the history of Sri Lanka's foreign policy since independence, we have seen how successive governments have taken various foreign policy stances and directions during Cold War era and post-Cold War era. Therefore, it has been very difficult for Sri Lanka as a country to maintain a neutral and friendly foreign policy, where all the time, with all the countries, they have maintained a friendly foreign policy, mainly due to the different internal political policies of, you know, the subsequent governments. If we briefly go down the memory lane, Sri Lanka's foreign policy, for example, under Prime Minister D.S. Sinhanayake from 1948 to 1956, his relationship with the Western Bloc, he thought that was the only solution for economic growth in Sri Lanka. Then his successor, Sir John Kutalavala, he signed the Rubberized Pact with Communist China in 1952. And this deal was done to settle the balance of payment crisis at the time. And in retaliation, we saw the U.S. Economic Aid Agreement never coming into operation. And subsequent governments, mainly S.W. Bandaranaike's foreign policy, which was based on non-alignment and friendship with all countries. Then we saw Mrs. Bandaranaike's policy. It was anti-capitalist and therefore anti-Western. Then we saw President J.R. Jayawardena. He continued to receive foreign assistance from the capitalist and communist countries as well as international organizations. So we saw countries such as UK and United States, Norway and Japan, they became the biggest donors of grants to Sri Lanka. And then again we saw President Premadasa and then President Chandrika, and also during President Mahinda Rajapaksa's time, we saw, based on their political ideologies, the foreign policies changed, and also their decisions to align with different countries also changed every 4 to 5 years. So basically, in summary, if you look at the last 70 years, we saw that based on the political leadership of the subsequent governments, the foreign policies kept changing. So they were either extreme leftist or right-wing. So the country, as a result, suffered, because every 4 to 5 years, we saw certain governments aligned with some countries, whereas during another subsequent 4 years, we saw them aligning with different countries. So Now, developed countries, for example, like United Kingdom, United States, Australia, they can afford to change their foreign policies. They can afford to align with different countries every 4 to 5 years because of their economic situations. We have seen countries such as China, Malaysia, Singapore, how they have achieved their global development through long-term, well-planned foreign policy. So if you look at examples, like I've said earlier, China, Malaysia, and Singapore, they had one long foreign policy. So irrespective of which government came into power, the foreign policy predominantly, I would say, 75% of their foreign policy did not change. So they left about 25% for that subsequent government to be flexible to basically put forward their favored parties. But predominantly, it was a long-term fixed foreign policy. So Sri Lanka, especially countries like Sri Lanka, developing nations, I think it would definitely benefit if we have a long-term foreign policy. So Honorable Foreign Minister is also here today at the chamber. So I would request you to definitely look at basically make that change, because for 70 years, like I said before, we have seen subsequent governments changing their foreign policy based on their political ideology. But I think you all have come to make a change in our country. So I would request you, humbly request you, to consider having a long term, maybe 10 to 15 year foreign policy, which does not change based on the subsequent government. So if you look at the benefits of having such a long-term foreign policy, developing countries can avoid short-sighted policies that may benefit them as opposed to short-term policies. And also many of the challenges faced by developing countries, such as climate change, poverty, and inequality, are complex and require long-term coordinated efforts. So again, I would request the Honourable Minister to consider this. So another topic I would like to touch upon is commercial diplomacy, which is an integral part of in a country. I know in the Foreign Ministry we have an economic affairs division, but I think we need to be more proactive, because if you look at a lot of the developed countries, we see the Foreign Minister is also the Trade Minister. Now in New Zealand, the Foreign Minister also handles the Ministry of Trade Affairs, mainly because there is a benefit if you branch them together, because the commercial diplomacy, you can bring in a lot of investments into the country. So I would request again to relook at it and maybe introduce a system of performance-based incentives to the staff in those divisions, so that there are more investments brought into the country. And again, I would like to briefly touch on the depoliticizing of the foreign service. Now, I know the NPP mainly throughout their campaign talked about appointing most of the foreign service without having any political appointments. And we expected with the whole campaign, the Clean Sri Lanka campaign, that steps will be also taken to clean the foreign service. However, there are emerging indications that political appointments to the foreign service is continuing today as well. So I would again request the foreign minister who's here today at the chamber to relook at it, because that is not what was mandated. And also very briefly on foreign employment, as we know, there's a large number of female domestic workers who bring in a lot of revenue to our country, who are working in the Middle East. And as we know, women work for decades overseas, and when they come back, most of the money they have sent have been squandered by either their husbands, or they have been used by the families. So when they come back after 20, 30 years, they have to basically start earning from scratch. So I would like to propose today to introduce a pension scheme. I think the Foreign Ministry, together with the Foreign Employment Bureau, can work together and see if these women can be given a sort of pension, so that when they come back after the long service in the Middle East, they have some sort of pension coming in. So it's some system where their monthly salary, there can be a deduction made from their monthly salary, so that they can use that when they come back to Sri Lanka to retire. So we hope the Honourable Minister would look at this suggestion favourably. And I would like to thank you for giving me the time, and I wish you all the best in your ministry and in all your future endeavours. Thank you.